the headlines this hour. Iran begins 10-day celebrations marking the anniversary of the victory of the 1979 Islamic Revolution. British teachers, civil servants, train drivers, and university lecturers take part in the largest coordinated industrial action in years. And activist groups say executions in Saudi Arabia have nearly doubled in recent years as they detail cases of torture and unfair trials in the kingdom.
Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Mews. Thanks for joining us.
Iran has begun the 10-day Fajr dawn ceremonies marking the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. The festivities start from February the 1st, the day when the founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, returned to Iran from France after 15 years in exile. His arrival intensified protests against the U.S.-backed Pahlavi regime after 10 days later ended in the victory of the Islamic Revolution. The 1979 Islamic Revolution, led by Imam Khomeini, established a new political system based on Islamic values and democracy. Each year, millions of Iranians take to the streets to attend the festivities, also known as Dahe Fajr.
A spiritual leader who maintained a simple lifestyle, Ayatollah Sayyid Ruhollah Mousavi Khomeini was born in the city of Khomein on September 24, 1902. He grew up in a family with a long tradition of religious scholarship. He received early Quranic education at home and local schools, and pursued his later studies at Islamic seminaries until he became marja, or a source of emulation, a highly prominent authority in religious law. Imam Khomeini soon rose to fame as an anti-imperialism and anti-colonialism icon. He became politically active when, in 1963, the then monarch of Iran, Mohammad Reza Pahlavi, launched a program of reforms known as the White Revolution. The plan was an American-inspired package of measures designed to prop up the regime and nip any voices of dissent in the bud, all in the name of promoting the rights of citizens. Imam Khomeini was the first religious leader who openly condemned the Shah's program of westernization. That opposition led to protests against the monarch. In response, the Pahlavi regime launched a brutal crackdown and arrested Imam Khomeini. His detention resulted in an uprising in June 1963. Demonstrators were confronted by tanks and troops armed to the teeth. Thousands were killed. In November 1964, Imam Khomeini was rearrested and sent into exile, this time because he had opposed the legal immunity the Shah had granted to American military personnel in Iran. He spent over 14 years in exile, mostly in the holy city of Najaf in Iraq. But that didn't stop him from criticizing the Shah for making concessions to Western powers, in his view, a violation of Iranian sovereignty. People from all walks of life listened to his speeches via cassettes and distributed his letters, which became the bedrock of a budding revolution. In the early 1970s, Imam Khomeini gave a series of lectures in Najaf on the establishment of a system based on Islamic values. Those lectures were later published as a book under the title Guardianship of the Islamic Jurists. This was his most famous and influential work. It laid out his ideas on a system of governance that would end dictatorship, establish Sharia, or Islam's divine law, and would fight injustice, corruption, and oppression. Imam Khomeini's courage, charisma, and popularity opened a new chapter in a grassroots resistance against the Pahlavi regime. Ultimately, on the 16th of January, 1979, the Shah fled Iran, and on February the 1st, Imam Khomeini returned from Nafel Le Chateau in France, where he'd been living in exile. 10 days later, Iranians celebrated as the revolution culminated in the overthrow of the U.S.-backed Pahlavi regime. In March 1979, more than 98% of Iranians voted in favor of an Islamic Republic in a referendum. Under such a system proposed by Imam Khomeini, Iran is considered a sovereign country in the form of a republic that implements Islamic laws. A system in marked contrast to the dictatorial Pahlavi regime that was totally dependent on the West, in particular the United States.
A report says anti-Iran Kurdish groups based in Iraq were involved in Saturday's drone attack on a military site in the central Iranian city of Isfahan. The report has been published by Nur, a news agency affiliated with Iran's Supreme National Security Council. says some groups from Iraq's semi-autonomous Kurdistan region had supplied equipment and explosives across the border to be used in the attack. The report further says that the attackers received orders from a foreign spy agency and used an almost impassable route in northwestern Iran to transfer those materials. The report has not specified the country or agency behind the attack. Over the weekend, three micro-aerial vehicles tried to target a defense ministry complex in Isfahan. Iran's air defense units, however, managed to repel the attack. Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has met with Iranian manufacturers. The meeting is aimed at solving challenges facing the country's domestic production. Yusuf Jalali reports.
Over 600 business owners, producers, and entrepreneurs active in different sectors were invited to a special place, the office of the leader of the Islamic Revolution. The aim is to share their concerns and highlight the major challenges they face in their businesses, with leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, listening carefully and taking notes.
Your Highness, you instructed us on how to solve the production problems during the economic war. The 13th administration proposed a bill on planting 1 billion trees in 4 years. It's a very good initiative that can serve our agriculture sector, but we need to implement it in a shorter time.
We need to ensure maximum purchase from local producers and stop uncontrolled and illegal import of commodities that can be produced domestically.
Iran's leader says despite the imposition of extensive sanctions against Iran, the country has managed to keep its economic growth up and running and has taken effective steps towards indigenizing different economic sectors. However, Ayatollah Khamenei says this is not enough. He called on both producers and officials to continue to develop the economy and compensate the existing shortcomings in some areas. Entrepreneurs and producers here believe meeting the leader of the Islamic Revolution means a lot, since his instructions will push the government to take more serious steps to address production obstacles.
I believe such meetings will inspire and motivate us producers and entrepreneurs who have concerns about their businesses. Here, we got to know how much our leader cares about what we do when he listens to our demands and orders the authorities to meet our needs.
It's a chance to highlight the major hurdles that stand in the way of industrialists and find solutions to them. The leader's instructions will definitely provide a roadmap for the executive authorities to take action and remove the challenges.
The meeting came 2 days after Ayatollah Khamenei paid a three-hour visit to an exhibition showcasing Iran's capabilities in domestic production. The expo brought together top local manufacturers to present their latest products and services in a range of industries, including oil and petrochemical sectors, IT, aerospace, urban development, and agriculture.
Basically, such meetings with Iran's leader will not end without a significant output, especially when it comes to domestic production, as Ayatollah Khamenei has on different occasions stressed the need to support local manufacturers. This is because he views science-based production as a key to a resilient economy and a powerful counterforce to U.S. sanctions. Yusuf Jalali from the official residence of Iran's leader in Tehran.
Britain is hit with more industrial action over a long-running pay dispute between workers and the government. Teachers and train drivers have now staged nationwide strikes to press for their demand. According to the Trades Union Congress, about 500,000 workers are taking part, making it the biggest strike action in more than a decade. Over 85% of schools in England and in Wales would remain closed on Wednesday. Commuter chaos has been anticipated, as 15 train operators have planned zero train services. Workers are angry over the rampant inflation that has outpaced their earnings. They're demanding an increase in their wages in line with inflation. Most public sector workers, ranging from healthcare to railways, energy, and education, have staged mass walkouts since last summer, causing widespread disruptions across the UK. Our correspondent in London, Syed Purreza, says more and more walkouts will be on the horizon in the UK as long as the government refuses to raise workers' wages.
We're yet to see an actual general strike happen, of course, but it looks like if the government refuses to budge, we might be looking at something like that happening. And that's definitely a great worry for Prime Minister Rishi Sunak and this government, who has, as I say, refused to give these workers the pay rise that they have been demanding. We're going to see more of this in the coming weeks and months. Several other days, this is day one of several days of industrial action. It's definitely going to happen. And as unions rally their members, of course, when they have public support. And public support for the NHS especially has always been at the very top. They have the most public support. The teachers, too, according to a recent poll by MomsNet, which is a website a lot of parents consult when it comes to schooling, 65% of those polled have said that they support the teachers' action, the teachers' walkout today. And so definitely definitely would perhaps not be the right word, but it looks to me like we're going to see more of this in the coming weeks and months if a settlement to the dispute between, be it the teachers, train drivers, NHS staff, ambulance drivers, and others, is not reached between the respective unions and the UK government.
The European Parliament is desperate to display a unanimous position on arming Ukraine with more lethal weapons. However, some MEPs have described the military support to Ukraine as lunacy. They say the support could prolong the ongoing war with Russia and provoke a strong response from it. Jerome Hughes has more from Brussels.
The decision to send German and American tanks to Ukraine is continuing to generate controversy. Many believe the move will prolong the war, and there's concern as to how Russia might respond. However, at a parliamentary hearing on Tuesday, EU legislators were told the West should go even further.
Russia attacking Ukraine from Russian territory, so obviously we should provide the Ukrainians with long-range missiles, obviously.
There are a lot of EU lawmakers who agree.
Any delay to supply Ukraine with needed weaponry and ammunition is more lives lost on the battlefield.
Some argue constantly supplying lethal weapons to Ukraine is foolish.
We're prepared to risk nuclear war in order to continue this US-NATO proxy war. It is total madness. And this European Union and the European Parliament have lost the plot. They've lost the run of themselves.
European Union taxpayers have provided 50 billion euro to Kiev since last March.
What happens to all the money we send to Ukraine? Is it just disappearing into individuals' pockets? Even President Zelensky has had to admit there's a big problem with widespread corruption.
A number of legislators would like to see less division. Spanish MEP Javier Nart told his colleagues it's, quote, ridiculous to suggest Ukraine can win the war against Russia. For now, the US and Germany have ruled out providing fighter jets to Ukraine. Others, including France, have not. According to many analysts, the risk that the conflict could escalate further and spiral completely out of control has never been greater. Jerome Hughes, the European Parliament, Brussels.
West groups say executions in Saudi Arabia have nearly doubled under the rule of King Salman and his son, the de facto ruler, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. According to a report by Reprieve and the European Saudi Organization for Human Rights, the average of executions has increased to almost 130 a year since King Salman rose to the throne in 2015. Over 1,000 death sentences have been carried out since then. According to rights groups, those executed include protesters and children. The report also details cases of torture and unfair trials. Rights groups have slammed MBS for overseeing a harsh crackdown on critics. The Western allies of Saudi Arabia are also accused of turning a blind eye to the kingdom's human rights record in favor of their own interests. Russia says it wants to preserve the New START nuclear treaty, despite Washington's destructive approach to arms control. The Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov says the continuation of the treaty is very important to Moscow. He believes it is necessary to keep at least some hints of continued dialogue with Washington. The U.S. has accused Russia of violating the treaty by banning the entry of inspectors into its territory. New START came into force in 2011 and got extended for 5 more years in 2021. Under the treaty, the U.S. and Russia have agreed to put a cap on the number of nuclear warheads in their arsenals. Around 90% of the world's nuclear warheads belong to Russia and the United States. The NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg has stressed the importance of cooperation between the alliance and its partners in the Indo-Pacific, saying the region's security matters to the military organization.
We agree that transatlantic and Indo-Pacific security is deeply interconnected. What happens in this region matters to NATO. And what happens in Europe matters to you.
Stoltenberg made the comments during a visit to Japan on Wednesday. He hailed Japan's plan to double its defense budget as a sign of the country's resolve for greater security involvement. The NATO chief also pledged to strengthen ties with Tokyo to navigate what he called an increasingly tense security environment triggered by Russia's war and its growing military cooperation with China. Stoltenberg also warned against China's military buildup. Protesters in Myanmar and in some neighboring countries are marking the second anniversary of a military coup that toppled the elected government of then de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi. Silent strikes have been reported in major cities across Myanmar. Protesters also gathered in front of Myanmar's embassy in Thailand and hit the streets of the Philippines to express their anger over the military rule. Myanmar spiraled into a bloody conflict in February of 2021, when top military generals seized power and detained Suu Kyi and her associates. They accused the deposed leader of voter fraud in the previous general elections. Suu Kyi has so far been given 33-year jail term over a series of charges, including corruption. The UN says the junta has committed heinous crimes against Myanmar's citizens since taking over the government. According to the UN Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights in Myanmar, over 1 million people have been internally displaced, while more than 70,000 left the country. Meanwhile, the U.S., the U.K., Canada, and Australia marked Myanmar's coup anniversary by imposing sanctions on a number of the country's military and energy officials. The junta has so far defied international pressure to relinquish power. On Friday, it announced tough requirements for parties to contest an election planned for August. Suu Kyi's party has described the upcoming vote as a sham and says it does not plan to acknowledge it. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
ولایت فقیه in victory of Islamic revolution. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, these days mark the 44th anniversary of victory of the Islamic revolution in Iran. We are with you with the second episode of the special series on this occasion. In this episode, we are going to dwell upon the role of velayat-e-faqih, or God-given authority of supreme jurisprudence, in the triumph of the Islamic revolution. Stay with us, please. Human history is replete with wars and conflicts among various people due to the clash of their interests and differences of beliefs. According to the Quran, These conflicts will continue till the absolute victory of truth over falsehood. This battle of truth and falsehood has been affected by various powers in different eras. No doubt, power is originated in the leadership of every community. Victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran in 1979 totally changed the meaning of leadership and concept of power. This change was mainly in the form of a superior power, shaped with the bond of leader and people. Basically, the top achievement of victory of Iran's Islamic Revolution was the establishment of the Islamic system of government on the basis of the theory of velayat-e-faqih. Velayat-e-faqih, or God-given authority of the supreme jurisprudent, was not only pivotal in the triumph of the Islamic Revolution, it has also played a unique role in going through innumerable crises and overcoming unprecedented conspiracies, each of which could annihilate any system and country. As per the Shia school of thought, in addition to the principles of monotheism, prophethood, and the hereafter, a believer should believe in two other principles of divine justice and imamat, or leadership of the infallible successors of the Prophet of Islam. However, during the era of occultation of Imam Mahdi, as the 12th and last infallible successor, the most qualified person to hold the hems of power among Muslims is the supreme jurisprudent who possesses special qualities. The eternity and comprehensiveness of the Islamic laws require the existence of government even during the era of occultation. That is, the age when the 12th Imam is not accessible to the public due to the divine will. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, describes ulema as his vicegerents and the heirs of all prophets, and Imam Ali, peace upon him, calls them as the rulers of people. He says in a hadith, according to the edict of God and Islam on Muslims, it is obligatory that they do not do anything unless they choose a pious and God-wary leader who is aware of judicial laws and the practice of God's messenger, so that he gathers public properties, causes people to maintain Hajj and Friday prayer, and collects alms. Therefore, choosing a qualified leader for the Islamic community has priority over every other affair. Imam Hussein, peace upon him, also stresses in a hadith, the sources and hems of affairs are in the hands of the divine scholars, the very people who are trustworthy on God's halal and haram. For your information, dear listeners, halal means whatever religion permits, and haram is whatever religion forbids. A third hadith from the Imam of Age, Imam Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance, reads, as for the events, refer to the narrators of our words, because they are my vicegerents over you, and I am God's vicegerent. Here, Imam Mahdi clearly tells Muslims to follow those who have adequate knowledge of the Islamic teachings. Surely, the first group in this respect is the group of ulema. Imam Khomeini was the architect of the Islamic Revolution, who uncompromisingly fought the oppressors and defended the oppressed without an iota of fear. The Islamic Revolution triumphed when the U.S. was the leader of the Western Bloc and the Soviet Union was the leader of the Eastern Bloc of countries. At that time, any change was feasible just with the help of and dependence on one of these powers. Yet, Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, following Imam Hussein, peace upon him, as his role model, awakened the Iranian nation and caused them to rise up against the despotic and mercenary regime. Leadership enjoys the key role and position in every great event in human communities. Thus, directing and guiding any popular uprising and revolution is among the most important functions of leaders in the world. Meanwhile, one of the most important factors which materialize ideals in society is to have a monolithic ruling system which guides the masses. According to the Islamic theory, the divine leadership is like the string of rosary which links all beads together. Reviewing the role of Imam Khomeini as the person who successfully put into effect the theory of velayat-e-faqih is very important. Imam Khomeini promoted the lofty Islamic and human ideals, which people made every effort to materialize. These ideals included freedom, independence, justice, struggle against oppression, equality, and so on. For sure, the concept of velayat-e-faqih existed for centuries among Muslims, but it was Imam Khomeini who took it out from the books and textbooks of seminaries and put it into practice in spite of all oppositions and enmities of the front of arrogance symbolized by the U.S. Islam is the final religion that is based on a heavenly book, the Quran. To practice the Islamic laws, there should be a system of government and leadership to preserve the Islamic Ummah against enemies. This leadership should do its best to practice justice in society. Velayat-e-faqih is the fulcrum of the Islamic Republic system and the elements of its dynamism through decades. The role of this unique element has been evident, especially during innumerable plots that have been hatched by the sworn enemies of the Iranian nation. Ayatollah Khamenei says on the status of velayat-e-faqih, velayat-e-faqih is the position of engineering the system and preserving the line and direction of the system and preventing it from deviation, guarding and monitoring the general move of the system toward its ideal and lofty goals is the most important and fundamental role of velayat-e-faqih.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا أَوْ يُوهُ بِلِيهِ اسْتَعِينُوا بِالصَّبْرِ وَالصَّلَاةِ.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Today, we listen to the speech of Hujjatul Islam Salim Yusuf Ali.
Respected brothers, sisters, we've gathered here for the special occasion of celebrating the birthday of Imam Muhammad Al-Jawad Al-Taqi alayhi salam. On this occasion, I want to congratulate all of you, and especially the Imam of our time, Ajallahu Farajahu Sharif. Imam Al-Jawad alayhi salam, maybe because he was the only child, maybe because he was directly the answer to the dua of Imam Radha alayhi salam, he had a very special relationship with his father. And one of the very beautiful stories we have is how Imam Ridha alayhi salam used to take special care of his son even when he was very young. One of his companions, he says that he went to Imam Ridha alayhi salam, he told him that you're somebody who really loves children. You know, our imams were very kind, they were very loving, just like Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, they followed the same path. They used to be kind to the children. And he tells Imam Ridha alayhi salam, he says, you are someone who is very kind to children. Why don't you make dua that Allah gives you a child as well? And the Imam tells him that Allah has promised me, soon I will be given a son. And soon after, that's exactly what happens. Then he says that when this child was born to Imam Ridha alayhi salam, I saw that Imam Ridha would spend his nights late into the night, and he would be like almost as if he was singing lullabies to his son, Imam Muhammad Al-Jawad alayhi salam. One night, second night, third night, night after night. And eventually he says, I went to the Imam and I told him, I said that sometimes it is the case that parents will go and sing lullabies to the children to let them go to sleep. But why do I see you doing it so much, night after night? You're going and you're spending time at the cradle of your son. What is the secret behind this? Is it the case that you fear for his life and you're making special dua for his protection? What is the reason why you're spending night after night at the cradle of your son? And the Imam alayhi salam says that wayhaka, meaning that it isn't, you're completely wrong. What you're saying, it's not the case. He says, but rather, innama aghurruhu ilman ghawra, gharra. Innama aghurruhu ilman gharra. Okay, now this expression right here, innama aghurruhu ilman gharra, it's a very interesting expression. The verb gharra has different meanings. And maybe the Arabic speaking brothers here, they might be thinking it's a bit of a challenging. Sometimes words have common meanings and there's one which is a rare meaning. This is a rare meaning of the verb. Gharra is used sometimes to describe the way that a mother bird feeds food to her child bird. What does she do? She takes the food and then she chews on it herself, and then exactly the way it's supposed to be, she takes it and she deposits it into the beak of her child bird. I don't know if you've seen it. It's a very beautiful scene. The child knows to open up and the mother knows what to drop inside. Now in the Arabic language, sometimes these things that happen in the animal world, they are used as a tashbih, as a way to understand the way that we do things as human beings. So this feeding of a mother bird of her child is sometimes used in order to explain the way that somebody is taught knowledge in a nourishing way. So I was looking in the dictionary to understand this word deeper. And sometimes in the dictionaries, they go and they give examples from Islamic texts, ancient texts, to explain what the meaning of a word is. And you know, these dictionaries, for the most part, they're not written by followers of the Ahlul Bayt. They're just, you know, general lexicographers, people who are experts in words. But you'll find it interesting, brothers and sisters, when they wanted to come up with an example for what it means to use gharra in this sense, the example they gave is this, that according to a famous saying, Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi used to feed Imam Ali alayhi salam knowledge in the way that a mother bird feeds her child. So when Imam Ridha alayhi salam is saying, innama aghurruhu ilman gharra, he's using the example and he's referring people to the example of how our Prophet fed Imam Ali alayhi salam knowledge. And we know in Nahj al-Balagha that Imam Ali alayhi salam himself describes that when I was in the home of the Prophet, I heard that which no one else would hear save Rasulullah. I heard the scream of the shaitan when the revelation was given. Every day, the Prophet would unfold a new door of knowledge to me. And this was the way that Imam Ridha alayhi salam was teaching his own son, Imam Muhammad al-Jawad. That at a very young age, he would spend time with him, not just teaching him that knowledge, but nourishing him with that knowledge. The way that a mother bird nourishes her young child with knowledge. And brothers and sisters, there's so much wisdom that we can gain from this seerah and this example, the pattern, the role model that we have in Imam Ridha and Imam Jawad alayhi salam. What examples? Well, when we are, first of all, the importance of having children, of wanting children, of wanting to be challenged in a way that you cannot be challenged in other ways, save but by having children. That's one thing. Number two, of making dua for a child who will be having virtues and having that be the greatest aspiration. Here we have the imam praying for a child who will be the separator between haq and batil and will spread the world with justice. These are the types of values and ideals we should want for our children. And here we see the example of a parent who cares about knowledge being taught in a nourishing way. Knowledge isn't simply about memorizing the names of the imams. Memorize the five usuluddin, memorize the furu'uddin, and now you've passed and you're a graduate of the Sunday school. Alhamdulillah. Okay, excellent. I'm glad that you memorized that. But what does it mean to have that knowledge in a nourishing way? That you can not just know it, but you know what it means to be practiced. Not that just you read about the character of the imams in the history books, but you see it being practiced in front of you. How is it that parents can aspire to having that type of nourishing educational environment for their children? These are things that when we read about the seerah and the life of Imam Jawad alayhi salam, these things come to mind. These are the questions that we naturally want to ask and seek the answers for. And we see how Imam Ridha alayhi salam trained his son so that at a very young age, he demonstrated all those ideals and those morals that his father wanted to see in him. That famous incident where Ma'amun, la'anatullahi alayhi, the Khalifa of the Abbasid Khalifa of the time, is journeying in the land, and out of fear for his grandeur and his position, everyone is making way on the street. All the children are running away, but there's one child who remains standing. And Ma'amun orders his caravan to stop because he sees that the child is not budging. And he asks them, that, why aren't you moving away like the rest of the children? And the child says, that I have not committed a crime that I should be fearful and want to run away from you. And this road is wide enough such that if I were to move over, it's not going to be any wider for you to pass. Why should I move from my spot here? And then he asks him, he tells me, who are you and what is your name? He says that I am Muhammad ibn Ali ibn Musa ibn Ja'far ibn Muhammad ibn Ali ibn al-Husayn ibn Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. And Ma'mun is overcome. He's overwhelmed by the presence of this young child who is so confident, has so much izzah. And so he asks him, he tells me, what is the extent of your knowledge? He says, if you want to ask me something, then ask me about the knowledge of the samawat, meaning that ask me about those things that ordinary people do not have access to. And with that, they part company. Ma'mun had gone hunting, and when he comes back, he sees that Imam Jawad alayhi salam is still there. And he goes to him, and he says that, I have a question for you. When I went hunting, my hunting eagle had gone away from me, and strangely enough, he had came back with a live fish in his claws. Tell me, what is the secret behind that? And Imam Jawad alayhi salam tells him that I learned from my father, who learned from all the way from Rasulullah, that Allah has created these bodies of water, and these fish which sometimes come up from the water, such that they form clouds of fish. And there are rulers who have eagles, and those eagles sometimes go and they hunt down these fish and they bring them to their masters. And sometimes these masters are clueless, and so they go to the one on the earth who has the hujja of Allah, and they ask them these questions. And now you have come to me and I've answered your question. And with that, Ma'mun is forced to acknowledge that indeed this is truly one just like his forefathers. Now, of course, Ma'mun is jealous. Ma'mun is worried that this is the child who has been born to Imam Ridha alayhi salam. But he has to acknowledge it, at least, you know, publicly, in order to not lose face.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Adi Alimun Halim Hakimun Mati. شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمن
Your option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
The Zionist regime's medical blockade of Gaza has been described as one that gravely breaches residents' rights to healthcare in Gaza and outside. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. Middle East Monitor wrote in this regard, Gaza's health ministry accused the Zionist regime of delaying the entry of several X-ray machines needed to treat patients in the blockaded Palestinian territories, Reuters reports. The ministry sent requests in the past 14 months for 8 different types of X-ray machines and spare parts to repair existing equipment had been rejected or delayed. Dozens of other X-ray machines were allowed into the impoverished coastal enclave during the same period. The fabricated regime of Israel, which together with Egypt maintains a blockade around Gaza, citing security concerns, says it is worried about groups commandeering such machines for other purposes. Health Ministry Director Medhat Abbas said the equipment was funded by international relief and medical institutions on behalf of hospitals in Gaza. Abbas told Reuters, Holding back the entry of that equipment caused a delay in providing medical services to thousands of patients. Requests for such equipment, COGAT told Reuters, are examined on a case-by-case basis. Abbas said the Zionist regime's assertions about the medical equipment having dual uses were a lie. At Gaza City Shifa Hospital, Nalat Zaino, 51, said she had been waiting 45 days to have an X-ray done of her kidneys. Doctors blamed the delay on the withholding of equipment. As if the pain I am feeling wasn't enough, waiting has been another form of torture, the mother of four told Reuters outside the X-ray unit. The ensuing blockade, limiting the amount of goods crossing in and out, has crippled Gaza's economy and healthcare system, which suffers from a chronic shortage of hospital beds and medical equipment. Meanwhile, Arab News reported the Zionist regime's ban is not limited to medical equipment needed for hospitals in Gaza. It is also preventing the entry of spare parts for broken equipment in Gaza and the transfer of equipment for repair outside. Gaza's health ministry accused the Zionist regime of exposing patients in intensive care and those with cancers, heart diseases, strokes, and complex fractures to health risks as they are being deprived of devices that identify health problems and the required medical interventions. The Ministry of Health called on the relevant bodies to put direct pressure on the Zionist regime to bring in medical and diagnostic equipment and spare parts for broken equipment to save patients in the Gaza Strip from the guillotine of the occupation and the blockade by providing for their full treatment needs. Patients are forced to transfer to other hospitals outside the Gaza Strip, including hospitals in Al-Quds or the West Bank, and some in Egypt and Jordan, in order to obtain a diagnosis before starting treatment due to the lack of medical equipment. Samir Abu Al-Ain, 55, said he had to wait for 2 months until he obtained a medical referral and an Israeli permit to travel to Al-Quds for examinations at Augusta Victoria Hospital. Abu Al-Ain told Arab News, "I was diagnosed with cancer several months ago. Before that, there were suspicions on the part of the attending physician, but he was unable to identify the disease until after I got a diagnosis in Al-Quds, and I had to wait a long time until I got the necessary papers." He added, "It is not enough that we suffer from diseases, we suffer from waiting also and the fear that treatment will not be available. Many of the medicines that the doctor prescribed for me are often not available, and I have to wait a long time until they are. Obtaining a medical referral to hospitals outside the Gaza Strip involves a long series of bureaucratic procedures." The The Palestinian Center for Human Rights warned of the serious repercussions resulting from the Zionist regime's continued block on import equipment, which is needed to save the lives of thousands of patients in the Gaza Strip hospitals. Patients also suffer while waiting for a pass from the Zionist regime to Al-Quds and the West Bank, with dozens of them facing the Zionist regime's security bans. The primary responsibility for providing medical supplies to the population of the Gaza Strip lies with the Zionist regime's occupation, according to Articles 55 and 56 of the Fourth Geneva Convention of 1949, said the center. More than 2.3 million people in Gaza depend on governmental health facilities to receive treatment, while these facilities suffer from serious deterioration as a result of the blockade policy imposed by the Zionist regime occupation authorities on the Strip for more than 15 years, it said. The center added that the internal Palestinian division resulted in the fragility of the health system and a permanent shortage in the list of essential medicines and medical devices, in addition to the shortage of specialized medical staff.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Men and women as human beings are completely equal in Islam. This is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, meeting with hundreds of prominent Iranian women in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on January 4th, 2023. If you are caught in a situation where you have to choose between saving a child's life and working in an office, the child's life comes first. Do you have any doubts about this? No, no woman has any doubt that a child's life comes first if she's in a situation where she has to choose between a child's life and working in an office. The same goes for a child's behavior, a child's faith, and a child's upbringing. In other words, in the same way that you have no doubt about saving a child's life, the same also applies to a child's upbringing. Of course, there are some places where you can come up with a solution in one way or another for the so-called doubts between this and that, and solve this in cases. But if there are truly times when you have no other option than this, that is the child, takes priority over that is working in the office. However, if that work is permissible and necessary, and in some cases it is imperative, if that social work is obligatory at times, it is a duty. You must do that work. In that case, you must do it.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Of course, the extent to which it is obligatory depends on how important that obligatory action is. Now, I use the person's life as an example, but there are times when the importance of an obligatory action is higher than the life of a child, the life of a spouse, or the life of someone's parent. Thus, when you address Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam in Ziyar Ashura, you say, "May my father and mother be sacrificed for you." Who else is higher than a person's father and mother? May their lives be sacrificed for you. Or there is a verse in the Holy Quran that states, "Say, if your fathers and your sons, your brethren and your spouses, your kinsfolk, the possessions that you have acquired, and the trade in which you fear a loss, and the dwellings you are fond of, are dearer to you than Allah and His Messenger, and fighting in His way, then wait until Allah issues His edicts." The Holy Quran, chapter 9, ayah 24. We should not love these things more than God and jihad in the way of God. That is how it is in some places.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. Guiding me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.